Follow along with me, please, as we read from Philippians chapter 1, verses 27 and 28. Only let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of you that you are standing firm in one spirit, with one mind, striving side by side for the faith of the gospel, and not frightened by anything by your opponents. This is a clear sign to them of their destruction, but for your salvation and that from God.
It's indeed good to be with you. Good morning this morning. Perhaps you saw a movie long ago called The Saving of Private Ryan. I think I saw it perhaps once and maybe only saw part of it. It's an interesting movie. Tom Hanks plays one of the main characters. He's an army captain, and it happens just after D-Day. Interestingly enough, Private Ryan had brothers, and all of his brothers had been killed in war. They'd all died. He was the only one left. And so the military decided they needed to save Ryan. And so they send this captain on his way with a lot of soldiers to try to save him. The cost is pretty high. A lot of folks die trying to save Ryan. Tom Hanks at one point will turn to the other folks in his forces and say to them, "This Ryan had better be worth it. He'd better be a genius. He'd better do something. He'd better live a long life and do something like invent a longer-lasting light bulb or something." Finally, they find Private Ryan. And it's interesting, before they get to return, the captain is shot and he's mortally wounded and he's dying. And it's really interesting because he will say to Private Ryan, "Earn this." Isn't that interesting? Earn this. In a very real way, our text is about earning what we deserve, and it's very much about living a life that is worthy of the gospel. I entitled our lesson, "Just What Does It Mean to Be a Disciple?" I think it's unfortunate, but for many of us, we think being a disciple, being a Christian, is a bunch of rules. Here are the things I have to do, and here are the things I can't do. And so we want to see it as those sort of rules. Our text indicates that's just not the case. In the last section, the Apostle Paul had told folks not to be worried about his fate. For him, dying is gain and living is Christ. And then he goes on to say that he wants them to be proud of the life that he's living. He's conducting himself in this noble way, and he wants them to have confidence in Christ Jesus. It's at that point in our text that we come to this important verses that I think are going to be quite striking. Again, it's unfortunate, but some folks see living the Christian life as a bunch of rules, the things you must do and the things you can't do. Notice he begins by saying, "Only conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ." That phrase, "conduct yourselves," is an interesting word. It's not the normal word for conducting oneself. It's a word that means literally live as a citizen. Live as a citizen. Now, the folks in Philippi were pretty proud of the fact that they are citizens of Rome. Philippi was a Roman colony, and everybody born there it's like you're born in Rome. You're a citizen of Rome, even if you're born in Philippi. And they would have prided themselves in being citizens of Rome. But he's going to say you need to live as a citizen in a manner that is worthy of the gospel. The New Living Translation translates it this way. I kind of like this. "Above all, you must live as citizens of heaven, conducting yourselves in a manner worthy of the good news about Christ." It's this call to live this life that is noble. And it's an interesting command because the "only conduct yourselves" is only keep on conducting yourselves. Continue to live this kind of life. And so it's a call to live this life lifelong, living a life that is worthy of the gospel. This idea of living a life worthy is one that's a real popular idea for Paul. Here it is, to live a life that is worthy of the gospel. He will say the same thing in Colossians 1:10, where he will say you need to live a life that is worthy of your calling, the invitation that God gave you. Or he will say it yet again in Ephesians, live a life that is worthy of the Lord. It's interesting that all three of those, quote, prison epistles, he will use that same phrase, live a life that is worthy. Being a citizen, being a disciple means that I live this life that is worthy of what God's done for me. It's not a bunch of rules. It's not what you have to do and what you can't do. It is living a life that's worthy of what's been done for you. Isn't that a noble idea? I think it's something that we need to sort of learn and grab hold of. We must maintain our Christian witness regardless of the circumstances, whether it's persecution or false teaching or whatever may come our way. The disciple must know that he's a disciple, and that dictates his life. Your life must be dictated by the good news of Jesus, by your calling, by your Lord. The disciple is one who learns that. He learns how to live this kind of life. It's really interesting to me that Jesus may well have found it difficult to get that idea across to his own disciples. In Matthew chapter 13, you have all of these wonderful kingdom parables. And they're interesting parables. He gives the first couple of parables, and he will give them to the crowds. Everybody who's out there will hear them. But he will then have the 12 guys along with him, and just the 12 guys. And he's going to give these two parables about the 12 guys that I think are designed to help them. I think he's concerned that they're going to miss what it means to be a disciple. They're going to misunderstand it, and they may well see it as, oh, I got to do this, and I can't do that, and they may see it the wrong way. He wants them to get a different grip on what it means to be a disciple. He wants them to see being a disciple is like finding a treasure. Now, we are a people who are big into treasures. You know, it's 1947 and you're watching your dad's goats, and one of the goats goes wandering off, and you take a rock and you heave it, and it goes into a cave, and crash, something breaks, and inside it you find all of these manuscripts, some of them that date from 100 B.C., and you're excited and you go take your grandpa what you found, and I mean, what a wonderful treasure. Or you're diving off of the coast in Florida, and all of a sudden you're diving down there and you find this big case with all of these Spanish doubloons in it, and you know, that's wonderful treasure. Treasures are a big deal to us. And so Jesus wants his disciples to understand discipleship as finding a treasure. Listen to this verse from chapter 13, verse 44. The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and hid again. And from the joy over it, he goes and sells all that he has and buys the field. I love this little parable. It's a little simple parable, just one verse long. Here is this farmer, he's a sharecropper, and he's farming somebody else's land, and he's farming and he's plowing along, and all of a sudden he hits something. What in the world is it? And he picks up the box and he looks inside the box, and all of a sudden he finds lots of money hidden away. Back in those days, by the way, banks weren't a big safe place to put your money. The place you put your money is a mayonnaise jar buried in the backyard, you know. That's where you're going to do it. And so he finds somebody's treasure. And so what he does is he sells everything that he has so that he can buy the field. Now, I always want to know, is that an ethical thing to do? Should he have told the guy, hey, I found this and shared it with him? But the point is not that. The point is, he's found a treasure that means everything to him. The second parable is a parallel one. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant. By the way, the word merchant there is the word we get emporium from. He's a wholesaler. Seeking fine pearls, and upon finding one pearl of great value, he went and sold all that he had and bought it. And so here's this merchant who sells and who buys pearls so that other folks can buy them from him, and he can make money doing that. And so he finds the prettiest pearl he's ever seen in his whole life. Ah! What am I going to... I'm going to buy that pearl. And so he sells everything he has, and he goes and buys the one pearl. And so he's now going to... And again, I always wonder, is that a smart thing to do? I mean, he's invested all of his money in that one pearl that he's never, ever going to get rid of. I mean, how's he going to make any money from now on? But the point is, he's found a treasure. Jesus wants those 12 guys, just like Paul does, for them to see what they have as a treasure, for them to have found something that is valuable. It is something that is worthy, worthwhile, and I live my life in a way that is worthy of the gospel. I think that's important for us to feel. Being a disciple is that. Being a disciple is finding this wonderful treasure. And by the way, that's one of the reasons we do evangelism, because we found a treasure that we want to tell everybody about. You know, on television, I love these commercials, you know, where the lady finds this new detergent and she goes on the street and yells at everybody about this detergent. I don't think that really happens, ladies, do you? But you probably do tell folks if you found something that you worked better than anything you've ever seen. But again, it's this one, that's part of evangelism. You see, as disciples, we have found a treasure. We have found something that is worthwhile. It's not a bunch of rules. It's not things you have to do and things you can't do. It's finding this wonderful, wonderful treasure. Paul goes on to say, so that whether I come and see you or remain absent, I may hear that you are standing firm in one spirit with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. Paul is concerned when he's been with them. You know, they've done what they want. He's fought their battles. He's taught them. He's encouraged them when they've been down, etc. But now that he's not there, how are they going to behave themselves? Now, any of you who have ever taught school understand that when you're out of the room, the kids don't behave the same way they do when you're in the room. You know, they throw erasers, they hide things, they do terrible things. And Paul is really aware of that kind of thing, that might well happen. But he says that they need to stand firm in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. I think Paul realizes that these folks may well be folks who are in danger of some kind of division. They're missing what really matters, and because of that, they're fighting, and they're squabbling, and they're quarreling. Later on in this book, you'll find there'll be two sisters named Euodia and Syntyche. And I don't think they're arguing about any doctrinal issue. They're just arguing because they're arguing. And he will say, I want you folks to help them get together again and to solve this kind of problem. The dissension is probably there. But one of the things that we as disciples must do is to build unity. We've got to help folks live the Christian life together. We have to help them see the joy of it all and to find the value of all of that. He goes, in no way being alarmed by your opponents, which is a sign of destruction for them, but of salvation for you, and that too from God. I don't want you to be terrorized by your opponents. I don't know who these opponents are. They may be Judaizers, folks who are trying to say you have to keep the law. It may be any number of folks. But whoever those bad guys are, I don't want you to be frightened by them. As a disciple of Jesus, you've got him on your side. And ultimately, you're going to be victorious no matter what comes your way. You see, he can come to your rescue. You can't be terrified by those folks. And that is important for you to understand. He will go on to say, for it is to you it has been granted for Christ's sake not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for his sake, experiencing the same conflict which you saw in me and now here to be in me. Interesting language here. The word "it has been granted" is based on the word grace. You have been graced with. You've been graced with faith. God has granted you this wonderful faith in Jesus. But also, he says, you've been graced with suffering. Now, that doesn't sound like anything that's fun to me, but he basically says that's important for you to understand. You need to understand that those conflicts are very real. And he'll go on to talk about the kind of conflicts that he's faced. He says, you saw those in me, and I think you need to understand them. I ran across this wonderful paraphrase of this little paragraph by a man named Moo. Here's his paraphrase. The conflict that you are experiencing may appear frightening and thus threaten to discourage you, but you cannot allow that to happen. Perhaps you're tempted to interpret these conflicts as a bad omen, as though God is displeased with you and intends to destroy you, but that's exactly wrong. You must interpret what is happening as evidence that it's God's design to save you. Why? Because suffering is the way to glory and God's gift of salvation to His children. It's a wonderful text. Being a disciple means you're going to suffer. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is in this world. But you need to understand that you've found a wonderful treasure and that indeed you are living a life that is worthy of what's been done for you. What God has done for you is a call for us to live this worthy. We're going to sing a song as an invitation song now, and it may well be that there are some folks who need to accept Jesus as Savior and need to begin to live that life that is worthy. Perhaps you've turned your back on Him and you need prayers, and we'd be happy to pray for you if that's your need as well. But it's a wonderful calling for us to understand being a disciple is this call to live a life that is worthy, to recognize that indeed we have found a treasure. If you need to respond, would you come as we stand and as we sing?